Hi, I'm Madonna Guy, and you're here with the Natural Alternative. Welcome. Today I'm here with Vicky Tate. Welcome, Vicky.
Hello, how are you, Madonna?
Good, thank you. So you've just recently had a book published.
I have. So yes, it was very exciting. It's the number one international best-selling book, a collaboration called Women of Impact, and it was really fun to write, and it was great to meet the other women in the book.
Awesome. And what is your history? I got you on because there's so many people in pain on the planet. So I
Yes.
feel like it's one of those things that if we can take a little bit of pain out of people's lives, gives them some tips, it's got to
Yeah.
be helpful.
So I was one of those people, and I still do deal with chronic pain, and that's what got me interested in what I do. So I studied nursing when I started when I was 16 back in 1971, and finished my training in 75. And I've been in and out of the nursing industry pretty much all of those years. But when I was in my 40, I got injured when I was 16, fell over, and then I can you still hear me?
Yeah, no, keep going. I've just got an
Screen's gone
Andy
bright. Yeah.
Warhol thing going on. Yes.
Okay. And then, so I got injured when I was 16. By the time I was 40, I had injuries, chronic injuries in my neck and my arms. I couldn't use my arms. And a nurse without arms is pretty useless. And so I was sent on my way. And that was when I got introduced to this beautiful form of body work that I now do. It's very gentle, it's osteopathic based, and uses positions of comfort to heal pain. And I
Fabulous.
love it. Yeah, so I've
I'm
been
sure
interested.
anyone in chronic pain heard that and went, oh my Lord, how
I know.
wonderful.
So yes, my line to people who ring me up and say, oh, I've had this pain for a really long time and nothing's been able to help. I say, well, I help your body relearn what comfort feels like. And they, I haven't been comfortable for so long, I can't remember. I said, exactly, that's why you're ringing me.
And you were meant to be on the planet at this moment in time with Vicky.
Yes, and
Yes.
I love what I do. I get bored easily, Madonna,
Yes.
and so I've been doing this work for started 25 years ago, and I'm not bored yet. So it's a pretty good fit for me.
And is that because the humans are all different with their manifestations of pain? Or is it because you've continued learning? Or is it because you're just one of those people who you love nutting out a problem and every little human being has a problem to be solved?
I think if this was a multiple choice answer, I'd have the all of the above.
Okay, yep.
Yes. Yeah, I was fortunate to have a father who was an engineer, and I was the eldest child, so I got to do things with my dad that most girls wouldn't. And so I got to view the world from that engineer's point of view, but I'm also very kinesthetic and very empathetic. And so I can feel things that other people possibly can't feel. And I love learning. I love a challenge. Like one of my friends just recently has had a health challenge, and it was something that I knew a little bit about, but not a lot about. And so every day I've been doing a little bit of learning and sending her another piece because I told her what I thought was, some solutions, but I needed to qualify that. And by doing that, I've learned heaps. So I'm definitely a lifelong learner.
Yeah, absolutely. The last couple of years, with long COVID and things like that, it's just been one of these things where I have just done, well, possibly thousands of hours of listening to doctors and researchers now
Yeah,
with everything the last
definitely.
few years. It's fascinating. I've learned
Yeah.
more about virology and the immune system. I'm a naturopath
I
and
know.
naturopaths deal with the immune system all the time, but it's just been great fun.
Yeah, and we didn't need to know all of that detail before. We just needed to
Yes.
know sort of the outside version of, but now we've been educated by some of the world's greatest scientists who you normally would never get to hear because they are introverts. They sit behind their microscopes and their textbooks and their journals, and they don't come out in public, and they have stepped out and aren't
Yeah,
we grateful?
it's been awesome.
Yeah.
So, with your, do you have, so what, tell me about your book. So, the book was a collaboration of women. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, collaboration of women who either want to make an impact in the world or felt they had made an impact. And so my mission vision since I was really tiny was that I wanted to heal people. I wanted people to be well and happy and comfortable. And then I got nursing and I loved it because I was making a huge difference in people's lives and absolutely loving that healing nursing process and listening and being present and solving their problem for the time, for that little piece of time. Because when anyone who gets well, you never see again. You only see the ones who come
back.
That's
right.
Problems. Which is why we get a bit jaded, a bit like police, you know, we only get to see the problems. Once I got injured, I needed to, and also this whole kerfuffle that's gone on the last 3 years.
Yes.
I needed to find another way that I could get out there. And, you know, I'm in my late 60s now. I'm close to 70. So it's like I thought, oh, well, this is the sign to say it's time to stop. So I did stop for a while. But then I just got so bored and I didn't like who I was becoming. And I thought, I've got too much to give. I can't sit here with all of this in here. I want to give it to people. So I am now one of the Grey Brigade learning how to use technology. God, give me strength.
Absolutely. It only takes me a little bit of weird technology nonsense and I lose my capacity.
Yeah, I know. I have to do a little affirmation before I sit in front of my computer. I am friends with technology. Technology and I can solve problems.
So tell us about the orthobionomy osteopathic journey, because most people, orthobionomy I've heard of, I've been to an osteopath about five times, so I have experienced are they the same thing or is it a different level? Or
okay, so Arthur Lincoln Pauls put together orthobionomy, and he was a British trained osteopath, but he was also a judo instructor, and he was one of these really a square peg in round hole sort of person. So he came to osteopathy through judo. He was a judo instructor, and he and his students would get injured in competition and they'd go to an osteopath. And the osteopath, whether it was joking or for real, one day said, you know, Arthur, if you knew how to do this, you could get your students better because they don't get to see me for, you know, 3 days or more. By then it becomes a pattern.
Right.
And it's harder to fix. But we could get it within those first couple of hours, we could interrupt the pattern and they'd get better faster. Well, Arthur took that on as a challenge. And because he was a photographer, a judo instructor, and a driving instructor, not your usual osteopath.
Yes.
So it took him a long time to be accepted into an osteopathic school. But when he was there, he didn't like the force manipulations and didn't like giving them. And he knew in judo that when his students usually got injured once they started thinking, that when they were working with reflexes, they were able to move much more quickly and much more accurately. And so this got him thinking. He thought, why? Because he was, you know, being a driving instructor and a photographer and a judo instructor, he was very observant and was, you know, was very, so very present. And so he started to figure out, he thought, why am I qualified to tell that human body what's right for it? Why don't I ask the body what it wants? Because the reflexes are so good. How can I work with the reflexes? And that got him on his journey. So what happened with me is I had two falls when I was 16. I had two, what they call compression whiplashes. So the force comes up through the pelvis. And so a couple of my cervical vertebrae went in two different directions to try and protect me. The first one was fine. I'm 16, I bounce. The second one was almost the same fall, but I had my head turned and that one hurt. I managed it for quite a time. I had a son when I was in my late 20s. Unfortunately, he wasn't very well and needed to be carried for a really long time.
Right.
The stress of all of that plus the carrying exacerbated all my injuries. So by the time I was 40, I was a mess. And my massage therapist said, you need to, I, you know, you need to go see an osteopath because I can't help you anymore. And I'd been getting treatment every fortnight for 10 years. I was consistent because I needed to work. I was a single mom, you know, you got to keep working.
Yeah.
And I visited this osteopath and she did such gentle work. Now, remembering I'd been getting treatments every fortnight for 10 years, yes, she did three treatments doing almost nothing. And I was almost better. And I went, I want what she's got.
Yes.
And so I got introduced to orthobiomy and it was an immediate love affair. As soon as
So by that stage, you weren't doing physical hands-on therapy with people?
No, no.
Right.
I had just been dismissed from nursing.
Right. Because I have the same story with kinesiology, except I was doing massage with my friend Linda and we were swapping week in, week out. And then about 6 weeks later, because I just finished massage, she just started naturopathy, and one day her back felt different. And I said, what have you done? She said, I had an hour of kinesiology yesterday. I'm like, what? So 6 weeks later, we're booked into a kinesiology course, started like 5 years of training. Anyway,
So that's what I did. I did a weekend course, started 5 years of training.
Yes.
And absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved it. And was getting like miracles happening. And it's funny how when you don't know what you don't know and you're not attached to outcome, how miraculous what you can do when you're doing simple things can make a difference.
Yeah.
Once I got to that point where I knew what to do, and I would go in there with exactly the opposite of what Arthur had in his mind when he started doing his working out how to do orthobiomy, and I knew what I was going to do, and that was the plan, and I'd stick to it. People weren't getting better, and it took me a couple of years to get the ego out of the way and just allow the body to speak. Because what I love about the body is it is a self-healing mechanism.
Yes.
It has been given a God-given ability to get better. It knows what it needs. It knows what it wants. And it knows when someone has good intentions. And so when you approach the body with love and respect and no attachment to outcome, knowing that I can help this person but not you will get better.
Yes.
The difference that the nervous system and the whole of the tissues perceive, the whole, whether it's the soul of the person, I don't know what it is, to be quite honest, but I can feel when I'm not present, the body doesn't respond the same way.
Yes. I was listening to a podcast this morning, and it was by a guy who has just written a big fat book, and he's talking about the difference between genes and the nervous system.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so one of the things that they have discovered, and I don't know when the discovery was, but one of the things they've discovered is that the genes look at our external world and everything around it and work out how to function internally. The nerves want to know why.
Ah.
And when I heard that, I thought, and he was sort of giving like a history of the world and why we've run on survival stuff and how survival stuff impacts on us, and exactly about the superego and things like that, wanting to be the same as everyone else. But individualism, what a surprise. It's actually a good thing. And if Adam and Eve hadn't have said, I'm not going to follow all those rules. I'm going to try this apple. Like that was the start of individuality.
Yeah. So I've just been listening to Greg Braden. So it's not the God Code. It's the next one up. And he is explaining about ancient language and the code, which is in our genes. If you haven't listened to it, I'll see if I can. I'll tell you this. I've got it on my, if I can get my password right. On my Audible that I've been listening to, and it is called, come on, wakey wakey, Unleashing the Power of the God Code.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It is so interesting. So I'm about halfway through, and he's just explained This is big science, right? It's big genetic science. And he's just explained really well how our genes are coded in a way that can be letters or numbers, and that words that we don't think are necessarily related, for example, heaven and soul, when you break them down using this particular ancient numerology letter corresponding thing, which has a name, which I don't know what it is, I can't remember, they both are the same number, which is 8.
Beautiful.
Yes, and so the God code that they've discovered is that that our genes actually, our first gene strand actually says God or the creator within me. Yeah, I just got goosebumps.
Fabulous.
Yeah, so that's pretty interesting.
Yes, and the name of the video that I watched was called Watch the Interview That Solves Your Human Condition and Saves the World. Professor Harry Prosser, who was the former president of the Canadian Psychiatric Association, said it's the most important interview of all time.
Okay. All right. I'll find that.
Yeah. So there's some great stuff out there, isn't there? And I just love the fact that the nervous system needs to know what's going on. So if we're in pain all the time, what is our nervous system telling us?
Okay. So we have two types of pain, basically. We have acute pain and chronic pain. Now, acute pain is there to save us from ourselves. So, you know, you step on a sharp thing, we get pain. It's like, oh, don't do that. You put your hand on something hot. Oh, don't do that. And then it's sore for a while so that you remember, I'm not going to do that again. We do that with our littles when they don't want to listen to what we say. Sometimes we allow them just to make those mistakes so that they can remember that that action means that thing. So acute pain is absolutely essential to our survival as a race. Keep us safe. And it's there. It's usually when we get injured, it's there for a short time while something's healing, and it usually protects the injury so that it can heal better.
Now, how short a time? I heard that we turn into chronic pain hormones after about 48 hours.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that.
Okay.
No. So the literature and my experience is more like 6 weeks. So if you've got an injury, say you've broken an arm or you've got a laceration on your leg, that doesn't turn into chronic pain, but it's sore for about 6 or 8 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. So chronic pain is something that continues, that's not getting better, that lasts for 6 weeks or more. That's the definition that they have of chronic pain. And what happens when we hit into chronic pain is the brain starts changing its neural pathways loop.
So
acute pain is, I hurt my finger hurts, nervous system says, don't move finger, we're going to make it swell up, we're going to make it go red, and every time you move it, we're going to go, ow, and it'll stop you from doing that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. That's acute pain. Chronic pain is, that thing hurts, okay, it's not going away, I'm feeling unsafe. Therefore, I need to protect. Oh, I just got goosebumps again. I need to protect myself. So the nervous system starts sending reminders. Okay, change in temperature, there might be danger. Change in pressure, there might be danger. Change in movement, there might be pressure. Change in just about anything. Change in mood, there might be danger. And so what happens when a doctor says to you when you've got chronic pain, oh, it's in your head. It's all in your head because you couldn't have that much pain anymore. They're half right.
Yes.
Because it is coming from central nervous system, not just peripheral nervous system. And the good news about that is we can control the mind. We think the mind controls us, and for most of us, you know, 98% or whatever, it probably does. but we can control our mind. And we know this, you know, we know that during meditation, we have a changed state. We know that you can be in a really crappy mood and then your best friend rings up and says, hey, we're going out to see a movie. You want to come to? Oh, suddenly you're in a good mood and you can get dressed and go out. We know that when we're in pain, if we get distracted, the pain is less. Yeah. We also know that if, like, you get a paper cut on your finger, it hurts. Like, ow. Your child is stuck in a burning car and you've got a broken leg, you can turn that car over, you can get that kid out and you can walk 2 miles and then it hurts. Yes. Because you needed to do that for survival. So we know the nervous system, the mind can overcome the nervous system.
Yes.
And knowing that is an absolute gem, because we can work with our minds. We can, and you do have to work it because it gets caught in these loops. So we have to help it along.
Yeah, I was at a pain seminar last year and there was a doctor from the States, can't remember his name, but he's been doing a lot of psychosomatic work for pain.
Yes.
And he gave two examples which were pretty amusing about how in control the brain is in relation to pain. So one of them was in Canada, and the guy had a nail woven in and out of his hand the whole way across.
Oof.
And he had no pain because he had to drive himself to the hospital. So it wasn't until he got to the hospital, he was being taken care of, all the beautiful nurses looking after him. That's when his pain became 10 out of 10 and he was allowed to feel it.
Yes.
The second one was another dude. I think it might have been Ireland, but that could be a lie. He jumped off a work site and he landed on a nail, which went straight through his boot. And he looked at the nail. He was in a 10 out of 10 in pain instantly. Yes. So everyone had to get him, you know, get him to the hospital. He was screaming. He had to get morphine drip and all sorts of things when he got to hospital. Once they cut the boot off, the nail had missed. It had missed his foot. So two totally different stories that show the power of the mind.
Yes, I love it. And have you seen those experiments where they have a person and there's a board between the two hands? And then they have a dummy hand on the other side of the board. So this hand is over here, the board's there, and they've got a dummy hand here and their hand. And so they are doing these things where they're stroking the hand, they're, you know, doing all sorts of little sensory things, and then they get a hammer and hit the dummy hand, and the person goes, oh, wrong hand.
Oh, funny.
I love it.
It is. It's amazing. Yes, the brain is phenomenal.
Yes, we can fool our brain. And the other thing that is really comforting, I feel, for people in chronic pain is that when we are loved, and we've got rid of some of our junk that we carry with us, something happens in our body and pain reduces. So by having a modality, which is what I use, which works on love and respect and asking the body constantly, what do you want? What feels better? Sometimes it's actually verbal and I say what feels better, because sometimes what I think feels easier, the client actually thinks feels worse. And sometimes I'll override that and I'm like 80% wrong.
Yeah.
When I go the other way, which feels tighter, more restricted, not as easy to work with, they will have that breath and then there's freedom of movement. So, you know, we as practitioners, even with as much experience as I've had, it doesn't always serve me well to go against what the client wishes.
Yes. Well, I'm the same with kinesiology, because I will have an idea about what's caused something. I'll be muscle testing up and then I'll go, not what I was expecting at all. And probably about 80% of the time. But I'm really proud of that, because there's a lot of kinesiologists out there who they intuit what they think the answer is going to be. Yes. And I think my ego is in a good space that I don't need to be right, and I try to really double check everything I do all the time
Yeah.
so that my ego doesn't get involved, because I really don't mind what the outcome is.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah.
So
Yes. Yeah, I had a lady come in last week, and she told me that she had been in pain since she had a car accident since 2004, which is a long time. But it had got to the point where she was in chronic pain 24/7. And when I asked her, and this is the other really cute thing about pain, I asked her what her pain level was on a day-to-day basis, not when she's having a bad day, but on a day-to-day basis. She said, "Oh, about 4 or 5." I said, "So it's intrusive. It stops you from doing things." She said, "Oh, yes." But I said, it's not paralyzing. It doesn't exhaust you." She said, "No, not really." So she's lying on the bed. I've done a couple of things. Always like to make sure the pelvis is straight, because if the pelvis isn't straight, nothing above or below that's going to stay in line, because the pelvis is where all the weight comes from, the bottom and from the top. You like it's and it's the place of creation, you know. That's where I start. That's how I do it. Anyway, so I worked up, and I was now at her shoulders, and her hand was resting on her leg, but I just wanted to get to her elbow to feel how the elbow would move. And I picked up her hand just like so to move it, and I moved it about from her leg. I wanted to move it just to her lower tummy. So what's that? 6, 8 inches. Old money. And she screamed. And I said, "Oh, I am so sorry. Your 4 to 5 level of pain is very different from my 4 to 5 level of pain."
That is such a nice way of saying that. I was teaching one day, and I had a client who was she was treating her niece as part of her training, and the niece was saying that she had a 10 out of 10 as a migraine, and my student said to her, "It can't possibly be at a 10 out of 10 in pain. Giving birth would be a 10 out of 10, but this was like a 13-year-old girl." And so we had a big discussion
Yes, exactly.
about like
Exactly.
it's my experience, it's your experience. I can't know what you're feeling, and vice versa.
It's subjective. And look,
It's
the pain that
subjective.
I'm willing to endure now as my everyday, and I'm going pretty well, when I was 21, I would have thought I was dying. And so, you know, it is so subjective. Anyway, how I ended up working with this young woman was, I couldn't move her, because every time I tried to even touch her, I could see that she was cringing even before I put my hand on her. And so basically all I could do was just be present and hold her. And as I held her, her tissues started to move slightly and soften. She fell asleep on the table. And
Beautiful.
sent me a message the next day saying that her neck and shoulders were so much better. They were softer and more relaxed, and that she was so grateful that I listened. And I think that's the message for anybody who's working with people, is you have to listen, but not just listen to get a message. It's listen to understand. And so one of the things that I find I do is, if someone's been in a car accident and they've had, you know, pain for a long time, I will ask questions like, "So what happened in that car accident? You know, which way did you get hit? Were you turning your head, or what were you thinking at the time? What did you think when you got hit? What happened afterwards?" And what happens in those sorts of questions is all this information comes out, and then people will go, "No one's ever asked me that." And that's where the gold is.
That is where the gold is, totally. Because it's not just that moment where you've had a car accident and you're going to have to spend 6 weeks fixing your car or 6 months. It's the fact that you've had an accident, it's the money, it's the insurance, it's the phone calls, it's the how am I going to get home, it's the cost of the tow truck. I feel like a freaking idiot having done that. Like, was that my fault? What did I do wrong? It's all of that in a heartbeat.
So in kinesiology, you'd be wanting to look at those things. With orthobiognomy, I'm wanting to look at how the body responded, and I can watch, and they will actually move and say, I can't remember how I moved. And they'll do this, and they'll go, oh, yeah, I know which way you moved. I've got that. The body never forgets. That's the other piece of sweetness about our body. It never forgets anything. The other thing is it never lies, ever. You can tell me as much BS as you want, but when I put my hands on your body will tell me the truth. Yes. And I had a gentleman in the other day, and he's ex-army, ultra triathlon. So you sort of start to get sort of personality.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay. And having a lot of a challenge learning how to give over control. So I said, you know, I just need you to rest your shoulder into my hand. He's been having shoulder trouble for more than 10 years. And but it's finally got to a stage where it's inhibiting his lifestyle. And so it's been getting gradually worse. And trying to get him to relax his shoulder has been quite a challenge. And finally he got it. And what was I going with that? Oh, yes. And I'm doing a particular move, and I said, oh, this is an overstretch injury, because your body likes this particular movement, which is body likes to heal in the place where it was injured generally. So it can go back, revisit, put the pieces together, find that missing piece of the puzzle, and then go, oh, now I'm okay with that. Poof, I can relax. And so it was an overstretch injury. I said, can you remember a time when you, because he's, no, never had any accidents. No bike accidents. No. And he said, oh, I remember. We were traveling. We had a 28-kilo suitcase, and we were on a travelator, one of the escalators. We should have gone in the lift, but there were too many people trying to get in the lift, so we got on the escalator because we were in a hurry. And the suitcase started to fall, and I grabbed it. And he just kept saying, I can't believe I remembered that. I can't remember this.
We're not surprised, though.
No, not at all. And that was the moment his whole shoulder started to relax.
It's the issues in the tissues.
It is the issues in the tissues. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I've got thousands of stories I could tell. They just, yeah. But yeah, the
is
body.
It, I assume what you do, no, I shouldn't. Okay, change that. Does doing what you do help people's emotions?
Ah, yes. Yeah. So some years ago, like when I first started doing orthobiognomy, actually, I realized that, and I was a lot younger and hadn't worked through a lot of my emotional garbage at that stage. Yes. I'd done some work, but I still had, you know, ways to go, and you don't stop doing that until, you know, the day you stop breathing, really, if you're a conscious human. And people were starting to have emotional releases on the table, and I didn't know how to deal with those. And it was nearly always toward the end of the session, like we'd gone deep, and now we get to the issue and poof, we've got a thunderstorm of tears going on here. I actually had one lady, I had to ring her husband to come pick her up, because I said, I don't feel safe with you. I don't feel you're safe to drive. You know, you need to come get picked up. And I decided to learn EFT, tapping, so that we had something to bring people down. So, yes, the body does release emotion, and people will sometimes cry, sometimes they'll shudder, sometimes they'll get cold. Getting cold is a common one. I always have blankets, even on really hot days like today, I'll have blankets in the clinic, so that if people get cold, they can be kept warm.
Yes.
So yeah, the body holds the emotions. And the other interesting thing about pain is that your emotions will either make your pain better or worse. And I know I've got chronic injuries, and some of them are, you know, could be really debilitating if I decided that they could be. And I have good days and bad days. And I know there's two things, actually. One is what I put in my mouth, and the other is what comes out of my mouth.
Yeah.
So if I, Christmas, New Year was a write-off, too much sugar.
And how did your pain levels go over Christmas, New Year?
I actually got to the point where I've got a chronic ankle injury that the medical profession, bless their little cotton socks, can't do anything about, which I'm really grateful for now. At the time I wasn't, but now I'm grateful because I am getting better, whereas if they'd done something, I probably wouldn't have.
Yeah, you'd have screws or pins or, you know.
Oh, no, not just screws and pins. I would be bolted together from my calf to my toes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely no movement in my foot.
Yes.
And apparently it's a terrible operation and it doesn't go well for most people. So, and I'm a bit of a sensitive type, so I'm imagining that's not going to go very well for me at all.
But I had one of my clients have that operation. It took her 2 years to recover.
Yes, it's a minimum, minimum 12-month recovery. The surgeon, I'm really grateful for her. I guarantee if I do this operation for you in 3 months, you'll be sitting in that chair and you'll be crying, telling me what a horrible person I am because this is a terrible thing to do to you. And she said, I think, you know, we just try and keep you safe. If you can go 5 years without surgery, you're doing well. Well, it's 3 years now. And thank you for COVID was the one thing that I really got out of it as I got to rest for a couple of years.
Yeah, beautiful.
And it was my long service leave. But in that time, I got to really discover what I needed. And so one of the things I need is a low, very low sugar, preferably no sugar diet. Sugar is so toxic, and especially for inflammation. The other thing that I discovered by accident is fasting. Because when people fast, the little macrophages we have in our system are like our roadside pickup. You know, you've got all this garbage sitting around in your joints or your tissues or your nervous system or your brain or wherever it is, and you fast and the body goes around, it's got no food to deal with in the tummy, it gets bored, like, okay, let's do a roadside pickup.
Yeah.
What can we find? And it just picks up all this garbage. And there's a wonderful story about a guy who wanted to kill himself and he decided the way he was going to do it was to starve himself to death. After 4 days, he started feeling good and got over his depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fasting, low sugar, and hydration, but also my emotions. If I'm feeling frustrated, angry, judgmental, any of those.
I love my technology.
What's that? Oh, yes.
I love my technology.
Yes. My pain levels can skyrocket. I can go from being able to walk around the house quite comfortably with my special shoes to not being able to walk to the toilet without cringing the whole time.
Yes.
So, yeah, so they're some hints for people who've got chronic pain. If you want to talk with me about it, by all means, you know, I'm happy to talk with people about their pain issues and what I found works for me and a lot of my clients, by the way.
And do you give them homework like breathing exercises and stretches and all sorts of things?
I call them nurturing techniques.
Beautiful.
Yes. So they're self-care. They're nurturing techniques that your body's been crying for.
Yeah.
And when I find certain movements or, you know, breathing for the nervous system and for pain management and for emotional management, breathing, you know, everybody I know does it. And people who do it better actually have a better life. And there's a great study where they got people off the street. They put all these electrodes on them. And so people thought they were getting their hearts traced. But what they were actually tracing was their breathing. And they were doing all these psychological tests at the same time.
Yes,
so they were finding out what breathing pattern matched what psychology. Then they sent them all away, got people back into the lab, and hooked them all up again, put the breathing pattern up on a big screen and said, you have to breathe this breathing pattern. You have to keep it, and we're tracking it, right? So you have to keep it. Within 10 minutes, those people were at the same psychology that breathing pattern was in the person that they've originally tracked it in.
Fascinating.
It's incredible.
Did you hear about Joe Dispenza coming to the Sunshine Coast last year? Last year, the year before?
Yeah, it was 2020.
Oh, was it that long ago now?
With
the 800 people?
I didn't know there were 800 people, but yes, I wanted to go, but I was. That was when I was injured and didn't have any money.
Yeah, right. Because they did bloods three times a day. They took complete histories of everyone with all sorts of issues.
Yes.
And the one that interested me the most as a naturopath, because I'm really worried about the EMFs. for people,
Yes.
the electromagnetic radiations, all the satellites, the
Yep.
cell towers on the ocean floor. I think we're in a microwave soup on the planet
Yes.
at the moment.
Yes.
And there was a guy there, I interviewed Arthur Furstenberg early January, and he has been an EMF specialist for 40 years. So when I heard about this Joe Dispenza one of the guys at the weekend had been electromagnetic sensitive for decades.
Right.
By the time they meditated for whatever, you know, 6 hours over the weekend or whatever they did, it was a huge meditation weekend and breathing and stuff, he had no EMF sensitivity. And I thought, that is such a physical thing. And I'm fully aware it can help with back pain and stuff. But I thought, EMFs, really? With
I know.
70,000 commercial satellites in the sky?
Yeah.
How does that work? So, yeah,
so the body, the body wants to heal, and we just have to give it the opportunity. And sometimes we have to be a lot more rigorous than other times. You know, a two-year-old puts their teeth through their tongue and it's hanging on by a thread, and in a couple of days it's fixed. We don't have to do much about it. You cut your leg off, that's a different story. That takes a lot more healing. But, you know, in those workshops, what they're finding is people with stage four carcinomas, you know, melanomas, brain tumors, horrible cancers, are in remission. People who've been in wheelchairs for years can walk. And I just got goosebumps again. It is, the body wants to be well. And this is how, you know, the laying on of hands and the chanting, it doesn't work for everybody at that time. There's, you know, but Joe Dispenza healed himself. His history?
I've been aware of him for 15 years. I may have seen him a long time ago.
Yeah,
but
so
I
he
don't,
broke
I
his
can't
back.
Recall.
He broke his back, really, in a lot of places. And he was on what they call a rotabed, which is, a rotabed is a slab. It's only about as wide as your shoulders. And there's a hole for your face and a hole for your genitals. And you lay on that. And then every hour and a half or 2 hours, they put another slab on the other side. They screw you together and they flip you over and they take the slab off the top. So he was in a rotabed for a long time, like 6 or 9 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And all of his colleagues kept saying, because in America, to be a chiropractor, you have to be a doctor first. So he had a lot of friends who were doctors, not just chiropractors. And as we know them in Australia, a different,
yes,
different kettle of fish. And they were coming to him and they started saying, you've got brain damage because you're not accepting the medical advice. And he said, no, I will heal myself. I am not going to have spinal fusion. And they said, well, if you don't have spinal fusion, you will be in a rotabed the rest of your life. You will never walk again. And that's when he discovered all of the energy breathing techniques, because he had a lot of time on his hands.
Yeah.
He needed that time to heal himself.
And I've got a similar story with one of my gurus, Dr. Charles Krebs. He's the guy who developed the LEAP program, the Learning Enhancement Acupressure program I do in kinesiology.
Yeah.
Because when he was about 35, fit, healthy, he was an American and he was living up in Cairns doing some reef work, because he was a doctor of several things, but biology, or anyway, he was doing work on turtles, can't remember. But basically, he had a deep sea diving accident. So he had the nitrogen bubble in his spine. So by the time he made it, and he was a very proficient diver, so it wasn't anything he'd done wrong, but nonetheless, this nitrogen bubble. So quadriplegic, and the only reason he's alive is that BP or BHP was on strike down off the Great Australian Bight. And so he got flown down there because they knew people who knew people, and they were on strike. So he went into that decompression chamber, and
yes,
he was in there for like 12 days, which got rid of the nitrogen bubble. But by that stage, there was so much damage to his spinal cord. He had about 10% of energy going through the spinal cord in several places. So he should never have walked again. But he also spent 9 months in hospital, funnily enough. And the reason he was able to do it, he was a black belt in karate. He used to teach anatomy and physiology at Harvard. So he knew the vestibular system inside and out. So he would literally visualize the nerves from the brain, down the arms, back up to the brain, down to the toes, back up to the brain. And he walked out. Now, he didn't walk well, but he
No.
walked out 9 months later.
Yep.
And then it wasn't until another 3 years later, a few hippie girlfriends taking him to kinesiologists. Finally, one of the kinesiologists, sort of 2 hours of kinesiology, and he felt like his brain and his feet were communicating with each other.
Yep.
So,
Yep.
yeah.
Isn't that interesting? Both of them about 9 months. It's the gestation period.
Yes, that's
So,
very interesting.
yeah, I just, I hadn't sort of thought about that before, but when you said it, it was like, oh, 9 months. That's an interesting number.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, the visualization is really important. There's so many things that we can do that, and the thing is, there's not one right way.
No,
That's
and
what I
there's so much
love.
science. Now, the
Yes.
last 3 years, let's go, there's a lot of scientism out there.
Yes.
But there is some amazing science that is proving that breath work and meditation and, you know, like Wim Hof, you know, Wim
Yes.
Hof breathing, he got
Yeah.
Nobel Prizes for health.
Yes.
You know, this
Yeah.
stuff's very well researched.
Yeah. And the thing is, and as people like Joe Dispenza, because he's got that scientific background, is backing up with all of his work with functional MRIs, and as you like you say, the bloods and electrocardiograms. Is backing it up with all of this hard science that they can't
Yes.
go, oh, poo-poo. And he said he's got his art to a stage now where he knows when someone's going to have an epiphany. Because what happens is normally you have one side of the brain working, the other side of the brain working. We do this little dance. And then what starts to happen is they start to do this dance in unison and then poof. He said, you actually see the whole brain light up. And he can predict it now with pretty good accuracy. He said, oh, this one's going to have an experience in a minute. And they go, oh, how do you know? He said, well, see that stuff. And then poof. And yeah, and I think I've probably had one of those experiences myself. And it was when I was meditating, and time has no meaning. I have no idea how long I was meditating, because it was the white light experience and the voice it's never happened again, and it's never happened since. But for 6 months after that experience, I was in a total state of peace. Like, all these things would happen. I had nowhere to live. My marriage had just broken up. I had nowhere to live. I had no business. I didn't know where I wanted to live. I was living out of my car, and I was working as a helper on farms. That was the only way I was getting any sort of roof over my head and anything to do. And yeah, I was, because you can imagine how many things can go wrong in that
Yes.
situation. Yes. So, like, there were so many things. And my friends kept saying, I can't believe how calm you are. Because I like to control things. I'm a little bit of a controller. And yeah, so they said, wow, that's amazing. You're just so calm. But then an incident happened, and I lost my cool, and I've never been able to get back to that super, super calm, nothing worries me, at total peace, like the Dalai Lama sort of. It was just amazing.
Yeah. I don't know whether I've ever felt that. But
Yeah,
that's okay. That's okay.
I don't think many have, and I certainly wasn't looking for it. I was just trying to deal with some pretty heavy
Yeah.
emotions at the time, and I was doing this meditation over and over, and it just happened that particular day.
Have you heard of that brain surgeon or neurologist or someone who was in a coma for several months and he believes he went across to heaven because he did die? Have you ever seen him? He's got a whole bunch of stuff on the Gaia channel and he's
No,
written
what's his
books.
name?
He is a scientist or neurologist. No, he's a neurologist or a brain surgeon and he found heaven.
Yeah, well, look, I've been very, because being a
That's
nurse,
it. Even Eben Alexander, a
Evie.
neurosurgeon's journey through the afterlife. He's got
Okay.
things still on YouTube.
Okay, I'll look him up, because I'm very interested in that. Because I was fortunate when I was doing my nursing training, we had an instructor, a young instructor, and back in the early 70s, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross actually came to Australia and was giving lectures on death and dying, and she wrote the books. She changed the way the medical profession deals with death and dying forever. They vilified her. They tried to annihilate her. They destroyed her business. They destroyed her family connections, a whole lot of things. But she was working in children's oncology. So back in the 50s and 60s, pediatric oncology was cruel. Like, they were massive doses for little bodies, and a lot of those little bodies just didn't survive. And so a lot of them had experiences of heaven. And they would do drawings because they weren't so articulate at speaking about it. And so she started seeing through, because a lot of these kids never met each other. Like, they would come and go, you know, they're gone. Here's another one, whoops, they're gone. So they'd never get to meet each other in the hospital environment. But they were all doing a similar drawing. And she was seeing them. And then she decided to start asking questions, and they started telling her the same stories. She said, oh, that's interesting. Then one night she was called to the adult. She was a child psychiatrist. She was called to the intensive care adult section. They couldn't get onto the adult psychiatrist for some reason. And so she went in there, and this woman had been resuscitated and was flipping out, like was going nutso. And so Elizabeth sat with her and started telling her the story that the children had been drawing.
Oh, my goodness.
And the woman grabbed her by the arm and did one of those loud whispers and said, why didn't you know? I thought I was going mad.
Wow.
I know. So then she got curious, and she spoke with the chaplain. And so she and the chaplain started working together. They made a pact. They wouldn't speak to each other until they'd spoken with 200 people who had had this experience of each. And then they got together and documented everything. And their note didn't matter, their age, their religion, their experience, their education, their diseases, didn't matter what. They all had very similar stories. And so I've been interested in the afterlife, and I've actually experienced with people in hospital who are dying, and they are talking to their relatives and introducing them to the people who are walking through the door, and they're going, but there's nobody there. I go, just nod and speak to them, because they are there for your dad or for your mum.
My grandma had that happen. So my dad died when he was 44 years old, and her husband had died a few years before her, and her priest had died. So it was funny. So between those are three people who visited her in hospital. Yes. Oh, and my Uncle Mick, she had all these, you know, connections. And everyone kept saying, oh, Blanchie, she's off a rocker today. You know?
But they aren't. They are actually, that is a real experience. And, you know, what I say to their relatives is, you know, that your beloved one here is not losing their mind. You need to feel reassured, because they are being guided to heaven by those that have loved them and still love them, but they have passed on, and they're showing her, him the way. And I had one night, I had this lady, I was in medical ward, she was quite ill. And I was nursing, and I was doing a night shift. And so it was like, you know, 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I had to give her some antibiotics. And I go to walk up to her bed. She said, sister, stop. I went, okay. She said, there's lions at the foot of the bed. I have to ask them if it's okay for you to come in. Oh, okay. So I was about 21, 20. Oh, no, I might be a little bit older, but early 20s.
So a little skeptical in those days.
No, I wasn't a little skeptical. I was just, because I'd already been taught about this stuff by my lecturer, but I hadn't experienced it myself at that stage.
Yes.
And so I thought, oh, okay, well, I'll just stop here for a tick. She said, oh, no, you're okay. You can come in. So I came in, gave her antibiotics. 10 minutes later, she was dead.
Wow. Mm. And it was lions.
Lions. She had lions. I don't know what lions meant to her, because I didn't have enough experience at that stage to talk to the lions and ask them. why are you here? What's your role? How are you protecting Nancy or whatever
But
her
it
name
really
is?
does make you wonder about how we treat people who we would say are mentally ill. You know,
Yes.
because I've had this experience over the years where clients will come and see me when we look after them nutritionally and health-wise. Lots of things improve out of sight.
Yes.
And when they go back on their medication, you know, like it's really interesting. Even
Yes.
one of my friends, her mother's in aged care. And on days when she is there, she doesn't have a lot of money, so she doesn't visit a lot. It's a lot of petrol. But, you know, so on the days when she's there and she makes sure her mum eats once or twice a day, makes sure she drinks water, it's like her dementia disappears a bit. When they have her on, you know, drugs and, you know, she's out to it except for one meal a day, the
and orange
dementia's
cordial.
Worse.
Yeah,
It's
orange
awful.
cordial when they do
Yeah.
drink. But, yeah.
Just shocking.
I know. I know. I mean, what, you know, when my clients say to me, oh, so what can I eat? And I say, okay, well, when you go to the supermarket, you go around the periphery. They say,
Yes.
what do you mean? I said, all the aisles, they have a health food aisle, which actually these days actually doesn't have that much healthy food in it now.
No, it's much,
it's all,
yes, exactly.
Yeah. But they have a health food aisle. So what's the rest?
Yeah, it's all sugar and processed
Yeah,
food.
it's all processed food. Basically, just about anything that comes in a packet, avoid. So go around, do your shopping all the way around the periphery, get all the things that you need. Make sure that at least half of your bar, half of your trolley is stuff from the fruit and veggie section.
Yes.
And okay, yes, if you can get organic, great. If you can't afford organic, just eat lean,
Yes.
clean, green.
Exactly.
So lean doesn't mean no fat.
And
Lean
the
means
average diet in Australia, New Zealand, and America is about 60% ultra processed
Yep.
foods.
Yeah,
They
yeah.
have zero nutrition in them and they're inflammatory.
Yeah, exactly. So I live in an area, so I live in a rural area, but it's suburbia is creeping in like incredibly fast. We've lost 30 rural properties in the last 12 months. And in our little street, just on one corner, we're getting 200 houses where there were seven rural properties.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, lost every single tree. But before that happened, McDonald's, Hungry Jack's, Kentucky Fried, Pizza Hut, Domino's, all of those all moved into the main street. Up until then, there was none of that there. And
now people want to go because there's infrastructure.
That's
It's
right.
hilarious that that's
Yes.
what attracts people.
Yeah, and the houses are cheap. And sometimes the traffic jam is not from peak hour traffic. The traffic jam is from the fast food places.
Oh, goodness.
It's spelled out into the street.
That's awful.
It's, it is awful because their families, those children are growing up thinking that that's the best stuff to eat.
Yeah.
And they're not getting, you know, if a family is eating 50% of their food is green, then that's what kids get used to. And I remember when my son, we didn't do any of that stuff, of course, and my son, when he started being a teenager, he was visiting people's houses and eating what they were eating. And he came home one day and said, I can't believe how much shit my friends eat.
Yeah.
I said, what do you mean? He said, oh, it's all this fried stuff, packaged stuff, frozen stuff. And back then it wasn't so much takeaway, but it was a lot of minute meals and, you know,
Yes.
that sort of stuff, which we didn't have. And he said, I just can't believe they just don't eat. They don't eat a salad. They don't know what.
People don't realize that so much of that is carcinogenic. You know, there are so many ingredients well known to cause cancer all around the world, and people just keep eating them because they think it's healthy.
Yeah, and most packaged foods the same. You know, even if you're making it yourself and you're using a taco mix and you're using a tin of soup and you're using a tin of something else and you're using a packet of something else and you put it all together, it's just like if it's got more than three ingredients in it, it's rubbish.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, I bought something the other day that was in a glass jar and I thought, oh, well, look, you know, it's probably, and I can't remember, but can't remember what it was. But when I opened it up and it was only 55%, and I went, really? And even Jay went, really? You know, because One day I got home and I felt totally ripped off because I'd bought some organic broccoli and the only way to buy it from that supermarket was on a polystyrene base wrapped in plastic. So they've sort of gotten slightly better these days with bases of cardboard and, but you know, you just go, oh my gosh.
Yeah. I know. So yeah, it's
so you talk about all of this stuff with your clients
too. Yeah, it comes up, you know, they are on my table for an hour. And so most of the releases take between 15 seconds to a minute. And so, and because I've got so much experience now, I pretty much know what feels needs to go next. And there'll be times when I say, all right, we're just going to be quiet for a bit here because this one requires a bit more attention. But yeah, it's nutrition. I definitely talk to people because if they don't look after their nutrition, they're not going to get better pain management. And hydration definitely.
Oh my goodness. How many people don't understand hydration?
Yeah. And I say, if you don't get a water filter, you are the filter. And we have got town water to our property, but we choose to be on tank. So we've got 50 odd thousand liters of water. But from time to time, things happen, you know, pipes burst or somebody does something stupid and leaves a tap on and we run out of water. And then we go on to town water. Within a month, town water has completely clogged up our filters, completely clogged them, whereas we've been running for a year.
Yeah, right. Interesting.
And it stinks.
One of the best things that was ever said to me at a seminar on the microbiome.
Oh, yeah.
Is that if you are not filtering your water, you are destroying your microbiome every time you drink it. Fluoride and chlorine are antibiotics.
They are not antibiotics. They are life killers.
They are life killers. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
They're not just the bacteria in the gut. Yeah. And they slow down the thyroid. They make it so hard to have good energy. They get into the mitochondria. They screw us up.
Yeah. And the gut-brain connection is so strong. The vagus nerve, you know, we talk about the vagus nerve. What we forget is it's the largest nerve in the body.
It is massive.
I know. And it is the only cranial nerve that leaves the head. Hello, big red flag. This one's important. There's two, one running each side, another big red flag. So one gets damaged, you still got the other one. Controls your heart, controls your breathing, controls all of your gut. And a lot of your other sensations and emotions that come from those major organs. So that's why people who have high cervical fractures can still survive. Their kidneys, their liver, their spleen, their pancreas, they all still work. Maybe not as well as they would with all of the nerve supply, but the vagus nerve does all that.
Wow. And it's the vagus nerve. I listened to an interview from Dr. Stephanie Seneff about 18 months ago. It was a paper that her and Dr. Peter McCullough had put together. Mm-hmm. And that it was when they were trying to work out long COVID versus vaccine damage.
Right.
And she said that, and I think this was what they'd found with some people who weren't doing very well on the jabs, is that the spleen was creating the antibodies.
Oh,
and
there's
some connection between the spleen and the vagus nerve. So if the toxins happen to hit the vagus nerve, then it goes all the way up through. And then it depends what other nerves it impacts on. If it goes to the ocular nerves, it can make you blind. If it goes to the auditory nerves, it can make you deaf. If it goes to the tongue, the glossopharyngeal nerves, it can take away your taste. So it depended on where it went, but it was the vagus nerve that seemed to be the stimulus for that damage.
Okay, that's interesting, because the spleen is like our own blood bank.
Yes, it's a so big filter. It's like a big tonsil. It cleanses and creates. It's amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, they do cut people's spleens out if they get damaged in an accident and they can't stop, because it's such a sponge-like organ. They can't sew all the little pieces together and not have it leak. And leaking blood into your gut generally doesn't go well long term. So it's easier for them to take it out.
Yes.
Or so, I mean, we haven't actually done a lot of spiritual healing on ruptured spleens, but anyway, because they tend to just take them out straight away.
Yeah.
And so there are a proportion of people who run around without a spleen. Be interesting to have a look at them and see how they managed with some of the effects of the
Because the
injections.
other connection, sorry, while I've got you there, there's a connection then between the spleen, the vagus nerve, and Parkinson's disease, which she just mentioned in passing. And I thought, oh, what's that connection? And I swear I've Googled it like 20 times every time I've thought about it, but I've never been able to find the connection. So you're not aware of that?
No, they're starting to get some insights into Parkinson's. So there's been a fellow, I think he might even be Australian, and he came up with the theory, because he cured himself of Parkinson's.
Right.
And he came up with the theory that it was a hydration and mineral combination problem. And so that's how he treated himself. He got better. He's not a doctor. He's not an anybody.
Yeah.
And so I knew about him from a friend of mine who's a homeopath, naturopath, and acupuncturist. And he was talking about this fellow and how he was getting in contact with him because he had a couple of people with Parkinson's, and that the nerves just dry out. And that's while we're on the subject, we could talk all day.
Yeah.
While we're on the subject is if anybody comes to me and they have pain that is systemic, like we cannot find, usually I can find a focal point. It's coming from here, it's radiating to there, it's causing problems with this joint, it's causing this sort of zigzag pattern up the body. It makes sense. But if I get somebody on the table and they come in and everywhere I touch them, it hurts. Doesn't matter how much I touch them or how little I touch them, it hurts. And there is no rhyme or reason. There's no pattern. There's no focal point. They just hurt.
Yep.
Yeah. Usually they're taking statins for cholesterol.
I was about to say one of my clients got Parkinson's within weeks, maybe a month of taking his statins.
Yeah. Yeah.
And his doctor agreed with it. He never got rid of his Parkinson's, never got rid of it. And the drug that he needed to be on, I can't remember what it was, but its side effects are skin cancers.
Right.
So we tried all sorts of things. He was on lots of things for stem cell production and lots of cleansing stuff, but could not get rid of that Parkinson's after 1 month of those damn statins.
Wow. Yeah, because they demyelinate the nerves.
Yeah.
What we forget is, you know, like I've got high cholesterol. I am right smack bang in the middle of healthy weight. I've got good, I mean, I do exercise 3 to 4 times a week. My blood pressure's stable, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm all the healthies.
But what does cholesterol do in our bodies?
Exactly. Anyway, it helps with inflammation. Guess what? I have chronic inflammation. I'm celiac from vaccines that I had when I was really young. I have these bone injuries now, which are from celiac as a side effect of that. And so that's chronically inflamed. And anyway, so the doctor says to me, oh, your cholesterol's high, you need to be on some statins. And I said, well, what's my ratio? Because the ratio is written there on the form.
Yes.
Everybody who's listening, when you go to the doctor, if they mention cholesterol, ask what your ratio is. Do not leave the surgery until they tell you what the ratio is, because if the ratio is fine, you're fine. Because if you've got chronic inflammation, you should have high cholesterol, because otherwise your body's not doing its job. Cholesterol is like the police. They come in to deal with the problem. And it's like saying that because that suburb has a lot of police there and a lot of police activity, that they're the problem. Sometimes they might be, but mostly it's because you've got inflammation. And so the police are there to try and mop up. The cholesterol's there mopping up the problem.
Yes.
We need.
I mean, the hint is that the liver makes 90% of our cholesterol. There's the hint.
And our brain, yes, if you need to clean up your liver. But the other thing is that our brain is like 40% cholesterol.
Yeah. Yes.
And then the rest of it is in our nervous system. And the cholesterol only goes bad when you've got lots of inflammation and lots of cortisol, which tends, and lots of sugar.
And toxins, yeah.
And, you know, lots of toxins, and it solidifies and becomes hard. It becomes like, you know, like cement. And it's because it's a lifestyle disease.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't understand why lifestyle diseases aren't being treated with lifestyle, that they get treated with drugs. I know exactly why that happens, because
how many billions of dollars do they make per year? Funnily enough, I was listening to Dr. John Campbell this morning, and he was talking about the excess deaths around the world and how no one is discussing the excess deaths.
Oh, yeah.
But the first thing he said was, well, the first thing I did was to go back and make sure the excess deaths weren't from statins. And I thought, oh, interesting thing to go back and make sure that that's the first thing they checked.
Yes.
And I thought, wow, there's something they know there in the, they know
yeah.
there.
Yeah,
So
yeah.
just interesting off the cuff comment.
Yes. And I just had someone just today, just recently, yeah, today, yesterday, saying that their mother was aged and she has just been diagnosed with osteoporosis, and they want to start her on these injections that she has once every 3 months. And I just put up a comment, please Google that drug, because I know that the side effects are hideous, and I know what the side effects are. And that you can make your own decision. And somebody came in straight away and said, do not take any notice of this post. You need to listen to your doctor. Otherwise, da 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 da. It's like, yeah, okay. I'm not going to say any more now.
Yep.
Set my piece. Do your own research. Always, 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 always. If they want to put you on prescription drugs, and always have a look on Google and find out what the side effects are.
Yeah, and then keep an eye on it. Keep
yes.
an eye on it. And also ask Google if there's any nutritional support for it, because
exactly.
So many of our symptoms are nutritional deficiencies.
Yes, yes, mineral or vitamin nutrition's,
yeah.
Nutritional. And the other thing is gut, that your gut's probably out of whack. Get a water filter. Stop drinking that garbagey stuff that they want to send down the line for, and stop drinking bottled water, because most of it comes out of a tap and it's just been treated with ozone.
Yeah.
And I know this because I had a friend who was working in one of those places.
There's a few people these days who I've seen videos a few times on, you know, just on Facebook and YouTube, where they've actually got a whole bunch of bottled water and they've checked it with, and the colours coming out of them is ridiculous.
I know,
most
they look like
brands
swamps.
You cannot. Yeah, most brands you cannot trust.
I know.
Yes.
Yeah, I know.
And all of
and
that
really,
is going to make your pain worse.
Yes, yes. And they're expensive, and
yeah.
they're polluting the earth. So, you know, get yourself a water filter, drink good water, and talk to someone about nutrition, and get yourself living as healthy as you can. The other thing is, and this is where the medical profession think that they've got it all over us, is that they give you a drug, your symptoms go away in a couple of days, generally, not always, but generally. With nutrition, you're having, because with chronic inflammation, it didn't happen last week when you started feeling sick. It started happening 20, 30 years ago. So what we're dealing with is trying to clean up 20 to 30 years of sludge and glug out of your system so that it can work better. And usually takes at least a couple of months for people to start noticing the difference, because the body is a self-healing mechanism, but it's just like putting petrol in a diesel motor or diesel in a petrol motor. You put the wrong fuel in this wonderful piece of engineering that we have, and it doesn't work well.
It's funny, that, isn't it?
I know.
Yeah, it's so weird. So... if people would like to contact, because we could keep chatting all day.
We could just go on all these tangents.
Actually, I did notice something you said earlier on, because you're an empath.
Yes.
And then when you were a child, you wanted people's health to get well. You wanted people to be happy and healthy. And I thought, well, there's a selfish reason. You're an empath. You could probably feel their pain.
Yes, I didn't know it at the time. It was just I just decided I'm going to be a nurse, and my parents didn't want me to be a nurse. And I don't know how I did it, but I did all this research and found out what the nursing schools offered, which nursing school I wanted to go to, and what subjects I absolutely had to do, because my parents had another career path sorted out for me. And I had to find a course at high school that satisfied their needs but also would get me into nursing.
Wow. Well done.
Yes.
All I knew is that I wanted to avoid science. And oh my goodness, the last 3 years have been a huge upward trajectory. But, yeah. So how can people find you if they would like to? Because you do both online and in-house.
Yes, so I have people come to my clinic at Burpengary East for one-on-one sessions, and they're very valuable. You know, if people can manage to get to see me, I certainly recommend that. So on my website, which is www.bodyspinealign, it's bodyspinealign.com.au. You can go to the contact page and there are links there to have a phone conversation if you want to have a talk with me about what's going on with you and whether I think that what I'm doing may be of use. And I'm pretty honest with you. I'm not going to tell you I'm the girl for you if I think that I'm not the right person to help. And you can also make an appointment for an orthobionomy session, which is an hour and a half appointment. And I'd be thrilled to be able to help anyone out of chronic pain and get them into a life that's more pleasant and pleasurable and full and enriching.
Yeah. I think people are told so often medically that there's nothing that can be done and that they need to learn to live with their pain.
Yes, you're just getting older, just get used to it.
Yes.
You don't have to believe that.
It's so insulting to the magnificence that is the human body.
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah. And, you know, when you treat the body well, it treats you well.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just need to make small changes and it will be delighted and be very happy to cooperate with you.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is not your enemy. And as the sooner you can start to treat it with the love and respect that it's been giving you. I mean, feet in particular, you know, people get problems with their feet and they just complain all the time about them. And I think, you know, you think of how many pounds per square inch your little bones and your feet have been putting up with for all these years. And finally, they've just got to the point where they've broken because things aren't supporting them. And you're going and criticizing them. Imagine how they feel.
Yeah. Poor little feet.
Yeah, and they go, oh, never thought about it like that. And it's time you did.
It's totally true. And, you know, when people are, especially when people are put on those few extra kilos, you know, it's amazing how much extra pressure that is on the poor little tootsies.
Yeah.
And on the hips, you know, and on the lower back.
And the knees and the ankles.
Yes.
And then when they give in, then it's the neck and the shoulders and, you know, the carpal tunnel and the headaches and all that sort of stuff. Everything's connected. Your ankle bone is connected to your ear bone. Do not ever doubt that.
Beautiful. Well, that has been absolutely wonderful. Vicky Tate, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
What's your last bit of goodness and happiness and love and light you'd like to share with people?
Be kind and loving to yourself and others and your life will get nothing but better.
Beautiful. Mwah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madonna. It's been a delight. We have to have a coffee sometime.
We do. Cool. Thank you very much.